The author, Geoffrey Farnall, once lived in Eastbourne. His widow, Mrs. Phyllis J.J. Farnall, still lives here, and recently she kindly agreed to take a talk for us, for you. But first, a typical entry about her husband from one of the many reference books on English literature. John Geoffrey Farnall, born the 10th of February 1878 at Aston in Warwickshire, died at Eastbourne the 9th of August 1952. Educated privately, he began to write at the age of 19. After his family moved to London, he went to the Westminster School of Art and later went to America, spending 2 years as a scenery painter at the Astor Theatre, New York. His most notable work, The Broad Highway, was eventually such a success that he returned to England and made writing his career. Most of his books are historical romances of the cloak and dagger type, and some of his better known works are The Amateur Gentleman, published in 1913, The Chronicles of the Imp in 1915, Our Admirable Betty in 1918, and The Glad Summer in 1951. So, on a mellow evening in July, Bob and Judy Armstrong, complete with recording equipment, took your roving reporter to Mrs. Farnall's elegant Eastbourne home, where this tape is recorded, especially for you, our listeners. We hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoyed the visit, which, in a world of seemingly unending rush, was a breath of another age and a joy to us all. Mrs. Farnall, did your husband ever talk much of his youth?
Yes, he enjoyed talking about his boyhood. He was the eldest of four children, mm-hmm. and his brother Ewart, about 2 years younger, they were tremendous friends and comrades. They were very fortunate in having a very marvellous mother who was deeply versed in ancient legends and tales of chivalry and such sort, and she used to tell these stories to the boys, and so they were really steeped in the lore of chivalry and defending the weak and such sort of thing.
Did he ever tell you any of these, without going into any of them? Can you remember them?
Well, not the actual stories, but he did tell me the effect they had upon them, and they decided, they lived at Lee Green, and they decided they must clean up the neighbourhood. There evidently were quite a lot of bullies about, and the girls couldn't walk around without being called after and that sort of thing, and so they decided to fight all the chaps. I think about this time he took lessons in boxing, and he became very proficient. He was of small stature and short-sighted, but he used to say that he made sure to get in close to the big fellows and get a good uppercut. And so they went on until they'd won the respect that they thought they both deserved.
Very good. Well, of course, Lord Byron was a good boxer, so he was in a good school, wasn't he? Tell me, after his family moved to London, where was it he lived?
Well, he lived at Lee Green, and he went to school there, a small school that no longer exists. That's near Blackheath.
Yes.
And that's where he...
Had his home.
Had his home.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, did he ever talk of his days at the Westminster School of Art?
Well, not very much. He did mention it, and he met a very prominent Japanese artist there. I forget his name. But although he was quite good, and he had a very good idea of line, but he realised that he would never be good enough to make a profession of it.
Really? He really was aware of this, was he?
Oh, he was aware of it, yes.
Was he indeed?
Yes.
Tell me, I'd like to now talk about the places which influenced Geoffrey's writings. See, the reader will think, I suppose, of Kent and Sussex and villages like Sissinghurst and Pembrey and Horseman Den and so on, but you will know them much better. Can you sort of call some of them to mind?
Well,
Sissinghurst, I think.
Yes, well, he used to cycle about the countryside in his about 12 and so on, in his teens, in fact. And there were dusty old roads in those days, and he talked about going through the lovely lanes and drawing up at the old inns. And of course, in those days, the country folk were sitting in the inn, and he naturally got a lot of his characters there.
Yes.
And he used to say they quaffed vast extent of ale and made excellent food. And at Sissinghurst, he was sitting there one sunny afternoon, and there he saw the Ancient, which is a great character in the Broad Highway.
Yes.
And there he was in his smock.
Was this at the Bull, by any chance?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And there is a plaque in the Bull to his memory, but I don't think anyone ever looks at it. It's disappointingly insignificant, I think.
Is it indeed?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but he used to describe seeing the Ancient and the crafty, wizened old face and the gnarled hands on his stick, and he was making his way to church.
Yes.
And there was the old forge opposite. And it was
yes,
there.
Right, yes.
And it was there until recently. Unfortunately, it's been pulled down now.
What about other places? Was Gowdhurst one of them, by
any? No, not really. Tenterden.
Yes,
and
what a beautiful village.
Yes, isn't it? Yes.
I suppose one ought to call it a town, since it's legally a borough, but still.
Oh, is it? Well, I never think of it as a town. It's an old coaching place with its lovely wide streets.
That's
well,
right.
All around there, all Kent and Surrey and Sussex, he cycled in those days.
Of course, in those days, writers did do this, didn't they?
Well, they did.
Edward Thomas is an example.
Yes. They either walked or cycled.
That's right. Rupert Brooke again.
Yes, and of course, one did get the atmosphere of the place in that way.
One had time to.
Yes. Well, sometimes people said to him, well, how did you begin? And then he would say, tell us, what a wonderful reader his father was, and he used to read to them aloud, and he was a most eloquent reader, changing his voice according to the character, and he was steeped in all the classics. And there was the amusing story, when he was 8 years old, his father used to read to his mother after they'd gone to bed, but these two boys, Ewart and Geoffrey, used to sneak out of bed in their nightshirts and listen outside the door. But one time, they revealed their presence by a ringing sneeze. And his father came out and saw them there and took it all in good part, and they were allowed to stay up an extra half hour. But that inspired him, really, and he used to think, well, I could weave yarns like that. And he did, and entertained his schoolmates.
Very good.
Yeah.
Of course, you were both fond of walking, weren't you? And
yes.
Would I be right in thinking that your walking on the Downs influenced the fact that you ultimately settled here in Eastbourne?
Well, yes.
Because you loved the Downs, did you?
Yes, well, we both loved the Downs, and we spent many, many hours on the Downs.
Yes. Now, there's one particular book in which he used many people in the village, but set them back, I think, 40 or 50 years. Can you remind us of the book and of the village?
Well, that is Alfriston, and the book is Sir John Deering, and he set it back a century.
Century.
Yes, and of course he put all the village characters into this book, but they couldn't sue him, although he turned them into smugglers and such like, because he put them back a century.
Yes.
And there was Potter, and I can remember we first met Potter. It was in the middle of the night. We were staying with friends in a cottage in the village, and we were walking around, and there was Potter leaning against the market cross. So we spoke to him, and he was not a little tipsy. But he said he was always turned out at midnight by his wife, who went off ahead of when the moon was full. And so he spent the night out and slept in the barn. But he was a great character, and he used to wear a long frieze coat with enormous pockets. And the reason was that he would go smuggling rabbits and hares. And then there was Bunkle, the innkeeper of the Smugglers Inn. It's such a marvellous name, isn't it,
indeed,
Bunkle?
Yes.
Well, anyway, Geoffrey said to Potter one day, I would like a hare. And he gave a wink, you know. And then a few nights after, he came back. I got one for you, mister. And so Bunkle cooked this hare, and he came over the road to the cottage with it, and he said, here it is with all its doings and dumplings. And we had a very good dinner.
How lovely. Was there not an occasion in which he met somebody in the village who professed to know all about it, and in fact produced a frying pan or something that was connected?
Oh, well, now that was at Sissinghurst. We were in the car years ago, and he came out laughing like anything, with a shining frying pan in his hand. He said the innkeeper's in a terrible muddle. He says some bloke, he didn't know who Jeffrey was, he said some bloke wrote a story about this here place, and he said this is the very frying pan that the tinker used to fry the bacon.
How nice. Tell me, was there any particular work that your husband always dreamed of writing but never got around to writing?
Well, I think he dreamed of writing quite a lot of books. He felt he'd never done his best book. I think he'd like to have written a sequel to the Black Bartlemy treasure books and Adam Penfeather, and he did sort of have the opening, but he never got around to that one.
But of course he wrote so many that perhaps it was merely a question of time, was it not?
Well, it was really, yes.
Now, there's always a question that arises with writers. Did he have a set pattern of writing? Did he, for example, set himself so many hours a day or so many words a day as a personal target?
No, he didn't. But he found he could write better in the night because there were no distractions. If he settled down to work in the day, well, the sun would come out or he'd see me going up. Think how nice it would be going for a walk. So he was very much a night bird.
Yes.
But he didn't say, oh, I'll do so many hours. He just had to get into the theme of the thing and the atmosphere.
But did this not disrupt the sort of organisation of the house?
Well, it was absolutely ghastly, of course. but you see, he had to get into his own particular century and discard the doings of the present day.
And when he was engrossed, he went on and on.
And when he really got it deep into it.
And of course, the other question which writers always ask, how did he actually produce his work? What was he? Did he like typing, for example?
He never touched a typewriter in his life, but he wrote it all out in the tiniest, minutest writing you ever saw. And then when he had done that, he would rewrite it, but not the same night. He would get out of the atmosphere a bit, and then I'd say, well, now give yourself a rest. And then he would polish it very much and write it. And that was, in a way, a rest, because he wasn't creating them.
Right. Now, inevitably, I have to ask you, did he welcome your comments on his work, and indeed, perhaps on occasions, your criticisms of his work?
Well, he always read everything to me. It was really rather trying, because he'd wake me up in the morning early, when I'd like to have read my book and had a quiet cup of tea, and read what he'd written all through the night. And then if I said I thought such and such thing wasn't very good, he'd be a bit grumpy about it. But he nearly always rewrote it.
But he really did rewrite
it? Oh, yes, he did.
So we can really say that his books are in part your books?
Well, to that extent. I wouldn't like to say that.
I see. Can we talk just for a moment about your early days? I think you knew parts of South London rather well, didn't you? Well, you know, when they were really...
Well, I was brought up in Eltham. And in those days it was quite a delightful little village. You walked down the village street and there was Mellon's, the chemist shop, with the wonderful old vases of coloured water.
Yes.
And there was Mr. Stewart giving out pills over a very high counter. And then, it was all very mysterious. And then you go down further down the street and there was Wise, the sweet shop. And it had little bow-fronted, old-fashioned glass window, and you went down three steps, clang, clang went the doorbell, and inside, my word, your Saturday penny went a long way.
Was Avery Hill there?
Yes, Avery Hill was in a different direction. I used to go there as a child, and on the way down to Avery Hill there was a little wishing well, and I used to, when I wasn't being watched, climb down the steps of this and take a little of the water and hope that some magic thing would happen. Never did, of course. It was a delightful place.
Yes. Yeah. So you and Geoffrey came to this rather delightful house in 1938. Now it was here, among more than 40 books that he wrote, that he produced that charming book for your adopted daughter, Charmaine Jane. I think it's called A Book for Jane. Can you tell us something about it, and especially about those charming drawings in the book?
Well, actually, he didn't write it here, though he finished it here. He was abroad at the time, and he wrote it in India. And it was the result of many little holidays and her quaint sayings. And then when he'd got it together, she said, well, there are no illustrations, no pictures. There's what's the good of a book without pictures? No child will read it. Oh, well, he said, we better get an artist to do one. Oh, if an artist did it, that wouldn't be our book now, would it, my dear boy, she'd say. You better do them yourself. Well, I'm not a very good artist. Oh, you must try hard. You've always told me how hard you must try. So now go away and illustrate this book. And he did very charmingly.
Yes, indeed. I've seen him. Rather nice.
Yes.
In passing, Charmaine Jane, I believe, is now abroad, and you've seen her abroad and been on one or two adventures with her, haven't you?
Oh, yes, she's in Australia. She's married out there. Mm-hmm. And I've had some wonderful trips in caravans. I've been right from New South Wales to Queensland, and then from Queensland into the centre, Alice Springs,
yes,
and all around there to Ayers Rock, and then right up to Darwin.
Mm-hmm.
And I flew home from Darwin. We were 5 weeks in a caravan.
5 weeks?
Yes, you know, just landing somewhere in the middle of the night and camping and bathing in it, if there was a stream, but we went through the desert, mark you.
it was really trekking in true sense, wasn't it?
Well, it really was a wonderful trip.
Tell me, have you ever wanted to write yourself? I mean, is there a novel perhaps, or some other kind of work which wants to come out and hasn't yet come out?
I've always wanted to be a writer. I suppose that was one of the things that drew us together, because I did do quite a lot of writing, and of course I've never written that book that I should write, but I've left it again.
Yeah. Well, now, there are, of course, many questions we'd like to ask you, but I fear this has to be the last one. We shall follow it, actually, with a reading from the closing words of your husband's famous book, The Broad Highway. This seems to me, of course, to be an example not only of exquisite English, which is now almost a rarity, but a commanding way, really, in which to close our talk with you. But may I ask you first about that memorial seat to your husband's memory out at Wilmington? I saw it some years ago, little realising then that I would one day have the pleasure of sitting in your home and talking to you about it. So may we have just a memory or two of that?
Someone said I should put up some memorial to him, and I couldn't make up my mind, and I wasn't allowed to put it in Wilmington Churchyard.
No.
And so I got permission put it there, because we'd had so many happy walks there. Now, the first time we walked round there, we didn't know about the long man, and we suddenly looked round, and there he was, and it was such a wonderful thing that we neither of us ever forgot the surprise of seeing him there. So I got permission and put the seat there.
That would seem to be a fitting place in which to put a memory.
I think so, yes.
Very nice.
Yes.
Well, Mrs. Farnell, I fear that has to be the end of the interview, but I'd like to thank you not only on behalf of Bob and Judy, but also on behalf of all our listeners for letting us into your home tonight and bringing back the memories of Geoffrey Farnell and his writing. Thank you so much indeed. And so here we are with the closing words from The Broad Highway. And thus it was I went forth and toiled and suffered and loved, and in the end got me a little wisdom. And thus did I, all unworthy as I am, win the heart of a noble woman, whose love, I pray, will endure, even as mine will, when we shall have journeyed to the end of this broad highway which is life, and into the mystery of the beyond. Goodbye, and thank you for listening.